Wake up to the roosters, eat breakfast for a booster. You alive, say hallelujah to the man, the mighty ruler. Because of him, you able to do it. If you on his side, then you ain't losing. He gave clothes, food, and your roof. He tell mountains, get them moving. It's a great morning.
Wake up, wake up.
It's a great morning.
Wake up, wake up.
It's a great morning.
Wake up, wake up.
It's a great morning. Get up and go to that 9 to 5. Get up and get them dollar signs. Get up and go through overtime. Get up and put that overdrive.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back. It's another week. It's another session of Great Mornings Podcast. I personally believe there's no greater place you could be in the whole world than right here with us, because you're about to hear some incredible information that's going to benefit you, your community, and probably everything connected to you. So again, I want to welcome y'all today to another episode of Great Mornings Podcast. And with me this morning, I got a special guest who's become special to me over the last 6 months of my life since making the transition to California. I got a brother with me that's not just a well-known basketball player in Santa Barbara County in Santa Barbara, California. He's not just, I'm a believer in Christ. He's more than that. He's also a philanthropist, in my opinion. He's also a community developer. He's a fundraiser. He's a nonprofit giant in this world, if you ask me. I'm going to let him introduce to you a great friend of mine, a mentor of such. I have with me this morning Mr. Cliff Lambert. Cliff, what's going on, man?
Hey, going well, man. Glad to be a part of the podcast, and we're going to have a good time. It's just going to be a discussion. So I'm excited. I've been blessed by God and blessed by the community, man, and I'm living the dream.
That's awesome. And he says that often. For those that don't know him, this is your first time hearing him. He always, one thing I'm starting to adopt from him, man, is he always has a positive outlook on life and says that he's living a dream. Cliff, if you'll do us a favor for all the listeners, some this is their first time hearing you, will you just introduce yourself and kind of let people know what you represent, what you do, your background, all those sort of things?
Yeah, I'd be more than happy to. First of all, born and raised in Santa Barbara. Fortunate enough to have two loving, extraordinary parents. My brother, older brother, Wiggins, who is also very involved in True Vine Bible Fellowship, and we have a great relationship. I'm married to Roslyn Lambert, who is a speech pathologist. She has two children. We're excited because her youngest son just graduated from Colorado School of Mines in petroleum engineering. We're excited about that. And her other son works for Viacom. I have two sons, biological sons from my first wife who passed away in 2005. Very blessed to have my oldest son is Chris Lambert. Lives in Lincoln, Nebraska, has a PhD in education, and is actually studying film and wants to do documentaries and produce films. And then my other son lives in Phoenix, Arizona, Maricopa County, and is doing exceedingly well. They just bought their first home about 3 months ago. He has three children, 26, 24, and 19. The other exciting thing that I must announce today is that Roslyn, my current wife, we have one grandson that's 15 months, and we found out last night that our daughter-in-law is pregnant again. So we are excited. We've got a new arrival coming. We're excited about that. But a little bit about my background: went to schools in Santa Barbara. Elementary, Franklin, all East Side, Santa Barbara High, and then went to UCSB. I went to UCSB on a basketball scholarship. And I'm sure many can relate to basketball sports that get you in, but it won't get you out. So I realized very early after an injury that basketball wasn't going to be necessarily my ticket. I decided to focus academically and went from like a 2.3 to about 3.4. Gave up my basketball scholarship. At that point, I was working three jobs, married, 52 hours a week work, going to school full time. Wow. And started my career in the nonprofit sector in 1969. I was hired as athletic director of the Boys Club on the East Side at age 20.
Wow.
And so that started my nonprofit career. And I tell people that of all the positions that I've held in the nonprofit sector, either paid or volunteer, probably the Boys and Girls Club was probably the most enjoyable. And that's saying a lot, because I've been fortunate to co-found the Endowment for Youth Committee Organization, a nonprofit in Santa Barbara. And I can speak to that a little bit later. But I'm living the dream, man. Really very fortunate. I think basketball gave me a platform. I know that you can relate to that. Being a fairly good basketball player at Santa Barbara High School and doing some extraordinary things on the basketball court gave me a name in the community. Wow. And you can use that name for your own benefit, or you can use that platform to benefit others. I make my living by what I do, but I measure my life by my ability to give back to others. And I try to live by that motto. I don't make money in the nonprofit sector. I've been involved for 50 years in the nonprofit sector. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I'm happy that I refuse to take a check. Wow. And it's all about passion. It's all about giving back to the degree that the community has blessed me. God has blessed me, man, in a multitude of ways. And you know, there's that song about you can't be God giving.
Yeah.
But the same thing applies to the community, that the more you give, the more you get back. The community responds. And so when you ask, you're praying and you're hoping that you get a affirmative in terms of your request, because you're doing it unselfishly. Right. I am not benefiting monetarily from what I'm doing. I want people to understand that it's giving from the heart.
Right.
It's giving from a place that is sincere and committed and wants to see other, especially youth, thrive and live out their dreams and shoot for the stars, and all of those things are critically, critically important, man, because we sort of live in a society at times that's about me, myself, and I, and I don't want to be caught in that. It's living beyond yourself, seeing beyond yourself, and realizing that, in my view, God's got me.
Wow.
He's got me in the palm of his hand, and all I have to do is stay in alignment with him, and he's going to provide, and he's going to bless me, he's going to bless others.
Man, that's so good. And I think that gives us great segue into the first question, actually, Cliff. What we're talking about today, man, this whole podcast season has been about relationships from the male perspective. And what we're talking about today is building relationships that service others. And you just gave us plenty of information and plenty to chew on about the importance, the significance of serving others. Here's my first question for you. What would you say caused you to become interested in community and nonprofit work? Like, what was that driving force? What was that thing that made you at age 20 decide that you want to start giving back to the, because naturally 20-year-olds, man, they out trying to get it for themselves. You know, the reality is at 20, you're just building life. You're just starting life. So what was the thing that made you become interested in community and nonprofit work?
That's a great question. I think the impetus or the catalyst was growing up. I saw my mom. I mean, I had two parents that had less than a high school education, but were driven to be successful in a multitude of ways. My mom was involved with the George Washington Carver Scholarship Club. Okay. In Santa Barbara, that raised money specifically for African-American youth to enhance their education by providing post-secondary scholarships. So I saw that at a very tender age. My mom was involved with that nonprofit probably for over 25 years. And so I learned from watching her compassion, her commitment to her family, yes, but also to the community. And in this case, youth. And she served as president as well of the George Washington Carver Scholarship Club. So I sort of learned close up, if you're paying attention, growing up, if you're paying attention, you learn. Right. And so she made it clear, so with my father, that education was vitally important, and seeing her ingrained, entrenched in that arena sort of helped me. And then the other two or three things I would say, there's people that come along, because I don't believe that you get to where you are by yourself. And in my case, there were teachers mm-hmm. that really propelled me, that believed in me. One was Bill Van Schack, who was a white man in the 50s and the 60s that was ahead of his time, because he gravitated to students of color. And that was so different during the 50s and 60s. He understood that it was incredibly important that African-Americans as well as Latinos had a connection, that they were looked at and visible, and that he could make many of their dreams and aspirations become a reality. So he spent a lot of time. He was a school teacher. He was a vice principal. He was a coach.
Yeah.
And so I had him all through elementary school. And so I learned from him tremendous lessons. In the summer, he would volunteer all of his time, and we were Vans kids. So we would go river rafting. We would go hiking. We would go to the Sierras. We would go to sporting events. He had a ranch, so he had horses. So he taught us how to groom horses. So I was raised in an environment that was nurturing. Bill Van Schack, my fifth grade teacher, Marjorie Linton, who is the top teacher of all time, that really gave me hope and inspired me to learn, and was hands-on with me. So those things sort of led me to this whole thing about the whole is greater than its individual parts. Mm. It's not what you can do by yourself. There are other individuals that help you along, and never forget that you're only as strong as your weakest link. And so I realized that there were other people in my life that allowed me to become, if you will, the self-actualizing human being that I've become.
Wow.
And then the last thing would be my coach in high school, Jack Trigero, who was very militaristic, tough, very much attention to details, in many cases, my way or the highway. But there was an amazing thing that he gave his players, was this belief that you could do anything on a basketball court.
Wow.
That you could achieve greatness regardless of what the odds may look like, that he built within you this internal kind of combustion, if you will, that gave you the energy to supersede all expectations. So those were sort of the three individuals outside of my parents that really motivated me and helped me. And then the last thing that you asked was, in Boys and Girls Club as a 20-year-old, obviously, when I started, I was interested. Obviously, I got married early. I was 20. My wife was 17.
Wow.
I had to obviously make a buck.
Yeah.
You know, I had to provide, because we had kids early.
Right.
So I had to find a position that would help me not only finish my education, but also provide for my family. Wow. And to be perfectly honest, I had no idea what Boys and Girls Club. At that point in the 60s and 70s, it was Boys Club. It wasn't Boys and Girls Club.
Right.
So one of the things that hit me was, even though I was a product of the East Side Boys and Girls Club, when you're growing up, you have a very narrow view of the world.
Right.
You're living in your own bubble, in your own silo. So you don't see things as clearly in terms of issues and concerns that other students have or your homies would have, because you're just hanging and having fun. And then when I started working at the Boys Club, all of a sudden it hit me. It came crashing down, man, because all of a sudden I was connecting to real issues and real problems that I didn't see when I was growing up in the Boys Club. All of a sudden, I saw these tremendous needs that many of these kids that were coming to the club that I had no idea that they had to face, because I came from a two-parent household. I had no idea that a large percentage of those kids were coming from single parent households that were struggling, that were looking for help and assistance and guidance. I missed that.
Wow.
And so all of a sudden, there it was. There it was that I had an opportunity to transform in my own way the lives of some of these youth that were hurting, that were seeking, that wanted to live out their dreams and aspirations, man. And I was put in a place where I could make a difference. That was really the turning point for me in terms of the nonprofit sector, that it opened my eyes to the reality. Yeah, I was absolutely tremendously blessed. But again, it comes down to, it's not about me, it's about we. So right. What are you going to do with what you've been blessed with? How are you going to share that and give it back?
Wow. There were some things you said, man, that really just jumped out at me. The first thing that you mentioned is, and for our listeners, this can go across the board to all relationships. You said, paying attention, you will learn. And a lot of times I think, you know, asking questions are incredible, and there's a place for asking questions scripturally, if you have not because you ask not. But I've also learned that observation, and as you said, paying attention will teach you as much as asking questions. And that was so critical, and I hope that every listener heard that in regards to romantic relationships, professional relationships, communal serving relationships. If you just pay attention, you'll learn a lot. And Cliff, our situations are very similar. I was sitting in a college classroom my sophomore year, going into my junior year of collegiate football, and in the classroom, and I'm sitting there in a summer class, in American government class, and it just hit me that I started comparing my situations to some of my homeboys that were at home, and I was like, wait a minute, they don't have access to certain trade opportunities. They don't have access to college. There's no colleges in my hometown. They don't have access to everything I got. I'm going to eat 3 meals a day for free on a scholarship. And I went back home and instantly didn't understand what community work was, didn't know what a nonprofit was, just knew I wanted to take $300. I wanted to take $150, buy 300 hamburgers, get some buns, and give them to people in the community while we play basketball. And that kind of built up exactly what you were saying. It clicked, and paying attention to people's situation, it taught me so much in a moment. And another thing that you said that jumped out that I hope the listeners caught, you said the whole is greater than its individual parts. Man, that's so critical, because we look at individual parts. When you said it, I thought about Latino community, Black community, African-American community, Caucasian community, all Hispanic community. I looked at how we focus in on those individual parts, and we miss the whole of this thing. Because as much as Caucasians need, there are Caucasian brothers and sisters and children that need scholarships as much as Latino, African-American, and all the way across the board. And I thought that was so critical, man. And I think that really kind of describes what your community service is. And I think one of the things that I want to ask you, and this is for me as much as it is for any listeners, but I'm sure there's some of our listeners that are connected the same way, doing community service, that are in the nonprofit sector. And one of the keys is, Cliff, and you know this as well as anybody, and I'm telling y'all right now to every listener, they told me about this man before I got here. I was climbing a mountain, hiking one Saturday, and randomly met a pastor that I told him where I was pastoring at True Vine, and he mentioned Cliff's name. They call him a giant in fundraising. And one of the questions I got, this is for me as much as anybody, but I hope there's some listeners that are in the nonprofit sector. It's so hard, man, to raise funds to be able to do the things that you've been able to do. If y'all don't know, and he'll probably talk about it in a second, this man has raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for scholarship opportunities for kids in the Santa Barbara County area, and just done so much. And Cliff, you can speak to that if you want. But the question on the table is, what are some key factors to fundraising? What are some keys you would give to those working in the community like myself and others in the nonprofit sector? What are some keys from your perspective on fundraising?
Yeah, it's a very heavy question. One of the things that I would say, and again, this is not magic, you know, one of the things that I would say, you have to put in the time and effort to get to know your community.
Wow, that's good.
I mean, absolutely, you have to be grounded in the community that you serve. And once you're able to do that, you're more cognizant of the specific needs, wants, and desires of that community. So you have to have a good foundation and understanding where people are. You meet them where they are, not necessarily where you want them to be. You meet them where they are in their life cycle, and you take it from there. And so you have those conversations about what are your dreams? What are your aspirations? How do you want to maybe get there? Or what steps do you need to take? Do you think you need to take to get where you ultimately want to be? So once you're able to get a sense and a feel for what those community issues are and individuals' issues are, it gives you a platform to step out on and create, if you will, a purpose and a vision with goals and objectives to meet the needs of those individual students or individual families or needs within the community in which you live. So you have to be grounded in your community. Wow. That is critically important. Then I think the other thing is realizing that it's hard work.
Right.
There are over 1,500 nonprofit agencies in Santa Barbara County.
Wow.
1,500. So you're competing, you know, against a multitude of nonprofit agencies that are very successful, very much, how shall I put it, much in the eyes of the public, and many of those higher end nonprofit agency, Boys and Girls Club, Calm, I can go on and name quite a few. Those nonprofits are sort of at your hierarchy and have some of the major players in the community to serve on those boards with wealth, money, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But where you sit where I'm at, the reality is I wanted to be involved in nonprofits work for those that are maybe the unheard, the unseen, the more invisible, the underserved. I wanted to really try to be a catalyst for that element, for that group of nonprofits, right, and for those sectors of the community that were shut out. I think the biggest thing in terms of being successful in terms of nonprofit fundraising is you have to know your audience.
Wow.
So when you're going to write a grant, for example, one of the first things I do before I write a grant, I try to make a connection. I scroll through who's on that board of directors of that foundation.
Right.
Who do I know on that board, or who else do I know in the community that knows someone else on that board that's going to allow me to at least get to the front door and hopefully open the door.
Right.
So it's networking. It's networking. In many cases, it's who do you know? And then after that, you have to be able to have the conversation, have a real conversation, hopefully face to face. And Pastor Craig, one of the things I do probably 70% of the time, I'll show up unannounced. I'll show up unannounced. Because in most cases, if you're writing a grant and you just send it in, you're one of 500 grants.
Right, right.
They don't know you.
Right.
You don't have a relationship. They aren't putting a face with that grant.
Right.
So it's critically important that you are involved in the community.
Right.
Serving the community, working on other nonprofit boards or volunteering. So they see your face in the community as someone that is committed.
Right.
So when you turn around and ask someone to give, they already know who you are. They know your track record. They know your credibility. And so many instances for me, before I write a grant, I'm making sure that I know someone on that board of directors. Mm-hmm. I'm making sure that if I have an opportunity to meet with the president face to face. And that's going to help me, but it's also going to help them, per our dialogue, our conversation, have a better understanding of who I am and where I'm coming from and my premise for doing what I'm doing.
Wow.
So that's what I've tried to do. I have tried to serve on a multitude of other nonprofit boards, volunteer in the community, show up to meetings, be engaged. And obviously, when the phone rings and Cliff Lambert is calling, most people know that Cliff Lambert is asking for money. So you know, but the reality is also, Pastor Craig, is putting your money where your mouth is.
Right.
And one of the things that I've always, when you talk about fundraising, it's imperative you serve on a board of directors, you're making sure that you give monetarily.
Right.
And so one of the things that I really think that helped elevate me in many respects, one, I've always been willing, even though I don't have a lot of money, I'm always willing to make sure that I'm giving more than I'm receiving.
Wow.
If that makes any sense to you.
Yeah.
There's a guy by the name of Sal Rodriguez that was director of Boys and Girls Clubs in Santa Barbara that said, while sitting on the West Side Boys and Girls Club, said, "You must give until it hurts."
Right.
Give until it hurts. And so I have attempted to do that. One of the things that I'm grateful for, in early 2001, 2002, I knew I was going to be leaving Santa Barbara. And I said to my wife at the time, I said, "I want to leave a legacy in Santa Barbara." And so with the Endowment for Youth Committee organization, I want you to really sort of think about this. Even before that, probably the latter part of the 90s, I was working 2-3 jobs, volunteering the nonprofit sector, refereeing high school and college basketball games, Division I, Division II. And so I was on the road a lot. I remember after that 1 year, I probably worked probably 140, 150 basketball games.
Wow.
And I remember coming home and my wife at the time saying, "Hey, Cliff, you need to give something up. You need to give something up. Your plate is too full. We're not spending enough time with each other." And I said, "Well, I'm going to give up basketball, referee."
Yeah.
And she said, "Well, that's money." I said, "Yeah, but you asked me to give something up."
Wow.
I'm not going to give up the nonprofit work that I'm doing for free. I'm going to give up something that is obviously bringing money into the family.
Yeah.
But it is secondary to working the nonprofits and seeing the outcome and the smiles on children's faces. I'd rather do that than make money.
Wow.
And so that was sort of a turning point. But in 2002, we actually committed $50,000 to start a permanent endowed fund, the first permanent endowed agency fund at the Santa Barbara Foundation. And so I basically challenged, if you will, or asked, or solicited, or whatever term you want to use, I went around and asked other foundations to match the 50.
Wow.
And many of those, and some of those foundations, as well as individuals, matched the 50,000. One individual did 125,000.
Wow.
So one of the things that I've learned is, if you put your money where your mouth is, mm-hmm. and you demonstrate, "I'm not looking for a handout, I'm looking for a hand up."
Right.
That fundraising becomes easier. Wow. You know, when you are investing your dollars, your time, your energy into what supposedly you are asking them to support, mm-hmm. is easier for them to give.
Man, I heard several things, right? And I want the listeners to be clear on this. And Cliff, man, you need to write a book. I'm telling you, man, it'll set a lot of people free. So the first and most important thing I heard in these keys to fundraising is having a passion for what you're doing.
Oh, absolutely.
Got to have a passion for what you're doing. And it's so interesting because people can see and discern through whether it's passion or not. And that makes so much sense, man. Having a passion for what you're doing is one. The second thing is what we're talking about, relationships. Now, Cliff, we can speak to this a little bit more. I know we got a few more questions that's scripted, but we can, you know, like you said in the beginning, this is a conversation. I've heard you say this, and it has benefited what I've been doing. I never considered myself like a major fundraiser, but when I look back at things I've done, you know, God has blessed me to do a pretty good job, but it's based off of this second thing. Passion was the first thing I heard, but relationships were the second. And we talked about this in the man cave when you were strategic and you were strong about it, telling the men, it starts with your personal relationships. Ask the people that you have personal relationships with. And
right.
That formula right there, the passion and the formula of relationships, I've seen it work, man. We just recently, and me and you've talked about this, but for the listeners, we just recently, for the first time in my life, raised $10,000 to give it all away in scholarships. And I think the third part that goes along with that is selflessness. Like I looked at that $10,000, I was like, man, this $10,000 do me real good, right? You know, the reality of what you're thinking. And then I didn't get a penny for doing that. Our team didn't get a penny for doing that. The James Earl Cray Scholarship Fund or Impact Church didn't get a penny. We gave all $10,000 away. But it started with people saw my passion. I was passionate about raising 10 grand to give away to kids that needed it. And then I just asked in my personal circle. I started on social media and it ended on social media, man. Before I knew it, I mean, we had over and beyond. We asked for $25 from each person, and Cliff, people were giving $500 and $150. They was giving over, and it goes back to what you said, man, passion and relationships and starting with those relationships. So I learned that from you. And the third thing that I heard, as I just mentioned, is selflessness, man. You cannot do this and serve others if you have a selfish agenda.
Absolutely.
It does not work. It will not happen. And people have the gift of seeing through selfishness and knowing if you're being selfish or if you're being selfless. So for all those that are working in the nonprofit sector that are fundraising, Cliff just gave us three things that I pulled out of it and so much more. Your passion, your relationships, and selflessness are things that will help you and are keys to fundraising. Cliff, let me ask you this because we're kind of in this vein and a couple more questions.
Right.
I know both of our time is sensitive. But how important is building relationships in the community and nonprofit sector? Like you've spoken to relationships and you've talked about teachers that were critical to you from elementary school teachers to basketball coaches. And when you were speaking it, man, I just thought about relationships I had with teachers and teachers that didn't give up on me. And this, we're not just speaking about parental relationships. We know that those are significant. That's without a doubt. We know that auntie, uncle, family relationships are important, but we're talking about relationships that are non-bloodline related. How important are building those relationships when you're talking about serving others in the community and in the nonprofit sector?
Yeah, relationships, man, are so critically important. I'm just going to give you an example. If I'm starting out on any fundraising venture, I immediately start thinking about individuals that can connect to what I'm attempting to do. Who are those individuals? In some cases, it may be 50. It may be 100, it may be 150. And those relationships, which are critically important to the success of whatever I'm doing, mm-hmm. many of those relationships span over 25, 30 years.
Wow.
I mean, these are nurtured relationships, cultivated relationships. And they aren't only relationships. In many cases, these individuals are now friends.
Wow.
You know, so relationships at some point, if they're done correctly and you're sincere and honest, some of those relationships turn to friendships.
Wow.
And that's a higher level of connectivity in terms of relationships is one thing, friendships is a whole other thing.
Right.
And so once you're able to develop that level, when you go to ask, you've already established a relationship, now a friendship, but you've also established respect and credibility.
Right, right.
So when you talk about how important is relationship building, yeah, relationship building, network building, your network is critically important, but it's beyond that. Can you take it to the next level? Can you take it to the level where it's actually a friendship?
Wow.
That is solidified, because now it's based on respect, trust, admiration, all of those things that raises it to a level that when you go to ask for something, they know that, one, you're being sincere, and secondly, they've got you. Wow. So in some cases, the ask, there's a confident ask because you have built this friendship, not just a relationship. So you know that they're going to be supportive. So to answer your question, this whole thing about building relationships, man, I've been blessed because I've worked in the public school sector. Mm-hmm. I've worked in the private school sector. I worked for the city of Santa Barbara. I've served on a multitude of nonprofits. I've volunteered myself in various communities throughout Santa Barbara County. I've been able to start programs from Carpinteria, Goleta, Santa Barbara, to Lompoc, to San Ynez Valley. I have been really blessed to be all over the landscape.
Wow.
And in doing that, there is definitely relationships that have been built. And out of that have become some friendships.
Wow.
That are long-term friendships. So I would say that, you know, it's easy to confine yourself to just your own immediate circle, meaning your family
mm-hmm.
and your job. And it takes an understanding wife and household to allow you to step out right. and engage in the community to create these relationships. And it's time consuming.
It is.
Very time consuming. And so people sometimes look at me and say, well, what do you do, Cliff? I said, well, I made my money in parks and recreation,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't making a lot of money. But God created avenues for me, as I pointed out before. Good God, He created opportunities for me that were unseen, that I had a hard time really even imagining, that He opened doors for me that, man, that just exceeded my expectations, man. And it goes back to what I said before, the more you give, the more He gives to you. So right. keep on giving, because it's really true. You can't be God-giving.
Yeah.
Well, in my view is, if you stay true to who you are, God's going to bless you. And wow. particularly if you're giving of yourself to others to enhance their lives, God is upstairs, up there, smiling, laughing, applauding, because it's about service.
Right.
And so when Jesus came, what did He do?
Serve.
He served. And that's what it's about. It's about service. And one person said to me some time ago, you can't truly love until you serve.
Wow.
You can't truly love until you serve.
Wow.
So that has stayed with me as well. And I'm a firm believer in that. You know, if people know if you're being sincere.
Yeah.
They know if you're coming from an honest place. And if they read that into you, they're going to be more apt to support what you're doing. And in many cases, Pastor Cray, I think, you know, a lot of the asks that we're doing right now to really try to enable the church body at True Vine
mm-hmm.
to be able to pay off this debt.
Right.
A lot of those individuals that I'm asking don't live in Lompoc.
Right.
These are relationships. These are individuals I'm calling that live in Arizona, that live in New York, that live in Virginia, They live all over the place, Santa Barbara, LA. These are individuals that have no affiliation with Lompoc or True Vine Bible Fellowship, but they are giving because of the person that is asking.
Right. Wow.
And so one of the other things I understand in the nonprofit sector, this is not an ego trip. The reality is people sometimes decide to give because of the person that's asking and not necessarily because of the nonprofit.
Wow.
So you have to understand the power. It's sort of like you can be the agent of change that you want to see in the world. Gandhi said, you can be the change that you want to see in the world.
Yeah.
We can within ourselves from the power from above. God has given us the power to be able to bring about change,
right,
to be an agent. God has given that to us. That's a gift. It's there. We are more than conquerors.
Right.
So one of the realities is that you can make a difference by yourself, but you got to be willing to open the door and bring others along with you.
Wow.
As I said before, two things. One, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And then secondly, the whole is greater than its individual parts.
Right.
And so I can be out there, I can have a vision, I can have a plan, but unless I can connect people to the vision and the plan, it doesn't go anywhere.
Wow.
And it goes with that. My other favorite quote is, a vision without a plan is just a dream, but with a vision and a plan, you can change the world.
Wow.
So, you know, it's all of these forces, man, coming together and really trying to understand from a dynamic standpoint of view, when you come up with an idea, how do you fuse all of that together to really make it viable?
Right.
And I'm good at dreaming. I'm good at being a visionary, but now how do you really put it to work?
Right.
How do you take it to the next level, which is really where all the real hard work comes into play? And one of the things that I say to folks, because they don't see you when you're preparing for a sermon,
right,
they don't see the time and commitment that you're putting into that.
Right.
And so one of the things that I've always tried to do in the nonprofit sector, if I'm involved in a major fundraising event or writing a grant or doing whatever, I try to make it look easy. I wanted to come off as looking easy because I don't want people to think that I'm struggling with it. You know, and so they don't get it. They really don't get it when they see it play out.
Right.
They don't understand. They say, well, God, you know, he did that easy. You know, it's easy for Cliff.
Right.
No, it's not easy for Cliff. There are, I would say most people are smarter than Cliff, but I always say you may be smarter, but I'm going to outwork you.
Right.
So my whole thing is work ethic.
Yeah.
I don't have tremendous intelligence, but I have drive. I have commitment to wherever that dream is.
Yeah.
And we'll stay up at all hours of the night to do the work that needs to be done with no caffeine, no stimulus.
Right.
I God has given me this incredible ability to work without needing this stimulus to be able to stay awake or to do the work that I need to do.
Yeah.
So that in itself is a huge blessing, man.
Wow.
So that's where I'm at, man. You know, God has been good to me. Do I make mistakes? I make mistakes. I tell people I make mistakes all the time. I make mistakes every day. But the other part of that is I'm taking a lot more chances.
Right.
So the more chances you take,
the more
vulnerable you're going to be.
Absolutely.
And so I can be a couch potato and not take any chances. I can just sit back and watch.
Yeah.
You know, but the reality is for me is nothing ventured, nothing gained. You know, life is about taking chances.
Yeah.
To put yourself, exposing yourself to even failure. Because even if you fail, you're probably going to learn from that failure and be stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us don't want to fail. I'm not saying I like to fail, but I definitely like to be humbled from time to time.
Understood.
So failure to me sometimes is a good thing.
It is.
Because it gives you that extra drive and that incentive to be successful. And so, you know, one of the things that I remember having a conversation with Chuck Schlosser, who is the former CEO, president of Sam Barber Foundation, I said something to him, failure is a great motivator to be successful in life.
Wow, that's good.
Failure is a great motivator to be successful in life. So I hone in on that, man. And there are times that I get beat up writing a grant or talking to someone maybe on the phone, and the outcome is not necessarily what you had envisioned.
Right.
I don't necessarily take that as a slap in the face. I take that as I got to grind harder.
Yeah.
I've got to be smarter. If there's a front door, there's got to be a side door, and there's got to be a back door. So even though I may not get in the front door, how do I recommit myself to creating a opportunity to come in through the side door or the back door with the same client?
Wow.
Because it's easy to quit when you hear no, but does no mean no, or does no mean maybe?
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Listen, man, you've been incredible, man, on so many levels and just in my life in this short period that I've known you. And today, I hope that all of our listeners have grabbed something. I want to speak to this real quick before we transition out. You mentioned about back to this relationship piece. You mentioned opening the door for others to help you, right? And there's an African proverb that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. And
wow.
I think that speaks to exactly what you're speaking of. Like, we can jump out there and do this thing. And you and I are kind of like, we talked about this. Sometimes, man, patience is not our strongest virtue, right?
Oh, yeah.
And we just want to jump out there. But the reality is, if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. And that's opening doors for relationships. And I hope that all the listeners that are connected to me, that are followers and supporters of me, I hope you're listening. Because we're getting ready to try starting the beginning of the year, going to raise 15 to 20,000 for scholarships. And I need all of them that's listening, Cliff. I need them to make sure that they're tapping into their personal relationships and that we're connecting with people and then asking people, because we got a passion to do so much. Listen, man, you've been phenomenal. Thank you so much again for doing this. Thank you all for everyone that's listening. I hope that this has been as impactful to you as it has been for me. How to build relationships and important in building relationships that service others. Cliff said it best that somebody shared with him that you cannot love if you will not serve. And Jesus said it best, I came to serve, not to be served. And the most important relationship that Cliff spoke about, I hope that you all caught it, is your relationship with our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And I don't preach to y'all a lot on this podcast, but you don't have life if you don't have relationship with Jesus. For Jesus is life, the truth, the way, and the life. And no other one gets back to the Father except through him. So listen, I love all of y'all. Remember, no matter what obstacles you face, that it's always, always, family, a great day to be great. I love y'all and have a phenomenal rest of your week. Peace.